All right. No more talking about that stuff. We're officially recording.
What stuff is that, Mark?
You know.
Yeah.
You know this stuff.
I mean,
the way all right. We're going in dry.
We kind of are.
This is going to be a weird one.
This is definitely going to be a very weird one. With like almost, there's like almost no buildup, sort of.
Yeah. I think it's going to be a shorty.
Two
verses.
I mean, two verses, but we got shit to talk about.
It's true. Welcome to Lyrics to Go, the podcast where we take a deep dive into lyrics that are questionable at best, but have largely dodged public ridicule until now. My echo just said something about Portillo's. Threw me off my game.
Portillo's?
Yeah. I couldn't even register the other stuff that it said around it, but it said something about Portillo's.
Really?
And it got me very excited. How are you?
I would like some Portillo's.
Oh, so would I.
Jesus Christ.
I had some last weekend when we went to Orlando, and it
did
was...
You? What'd you have?
King shit. So I got a big beef.
The beef, yeah.
The beef.
Thinking of the bear.
Yes,
I
mean, yes.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Of course. Yeah. The big beef with some gravy on the side, sweet peppers, extra sweet peppers. And I also got a Chicago dog.
Oh.
I split my Chicago dog with Kristen, mm-hmm. friend of the podcast, because she had never had one before.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah.
I got to ask, I'm assuming it has to have celery salt on it.
Oh yeah. It was the
so
real
then
deal.
She had a Chicago dog.
Yeah, yeah.
Portillo's, man.
And she liked it a lot.
Yeah.
We're both tired, boys. It's a Tuesday, or no?
Can we continue to talk about food?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. It's now the Doughboys. We're a couple of tired guys. You worked today.
Early days, still kind of basking in the afterglow of the Jamie episode.
Yeah.
It's always
fun times.
Yeah, I love when JR's in here. It's fun.
Always a good time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and still, the other day I went to go turn on my car, and the Christmas song with Shaggy and
Sting
came on.
That was the worst.
Oh, God, that was just the worst. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you have a good week other than that?
I mean, it's been 2 days.
Did you have a good couple of days? I mean, I know about your weekend already.
I almost played hooky on Monday from work, and then one of my coworkers called off, so I went in, and it would just ended up being absolutely insane.
Just
today was better.
How dare you think about taking the day off?
Yeah,
yeah.
Tell me about it.
Yeah,
but how about you?
It's good. I got shit going on, which is good. Which is good.
Good.
Yeah, yeah. But my week was. It was okay yesterday. I went in and did a bunch of maintenance at the shop, but this morning I woke up and walked out to a dead battery on my truck, which is always just the worst way to start the day. But it didn't turn out that bad. I got to work. I was able to get, you know, my stuff done, and then I had to go to Walmart to get a definitely not an ad for Walmart. Had to go there to get a battery, and it had just expired on its expiration date. Just on the warranty, and they just gave me holy shit. And then here's the crazy part: in the midst of all of it, this guy, one of the workers in the back, when they're telling me, "Oh, you're gonna have to buy a new battery," and I had to because I'm stuck there because I took the battery out and brought it in, you know. And I'm like, I have to get a fucking battery here. There's no getting around it. And this worker bee from the back walks out, and he goes, "That battery's not from here." We'd already settled the issue, but I'm like, yes, it is. It's your brand. I bought it here 2 years ago. I bought it from where I'm standing right now. And he goes, no, it's not. He's like, you know, I mean, you couldn't have gotten the warranty on that anyway. And the whole room is like looking at me, and I'm like, what kind of alternate reality am I in where I'm telling you I stood right here and bought the battery that I'm pointing at right here that says 2-year warranty on the side? And he goes, I'm telling you that we looked it up, it's not from here. And I'm like, can you just go away from me? I'm like trying hard not to like explode. And I was like, and he goes, listen, you pulled up here in that Ford. I'm like, I drive a Dodge. He goes, where? I said, outside. He goes, he looks outside and he goes, that silver Dodge? I went, yeah. He says, oh, sorry, wrong guy. I'm like, oh my God. So There you go, Walmart.
What in the hell?
Yeah, there you go. I mean, I'm like, I looked at the manager and I was like, can we do this in a less heart attack inducing way next time, please? You know,
wow.
I mean, it
how
was
insane.
Just, yeah, that was sort of my day. And also I got a little bit of bad news. Episode 131.
Mm-hmm.
Hungry Eyes.
Yeah.
Who you know, I love Eric Carmen, passed away last night.
Yeah.
And
I was waiting to see if you would bring this up.
Yeah. I listened to a bunch of raspberries this morning. and just
what a tour that would be, huh? The raspberries and the cranberries.
Raspberries and the berries.
The berries tour. Yeah.
Basket of berries tour. It was nostalgic going through all that. Man, you were like, I remember on the episode, you're like, you know, you're making them out to be the Beatles. I'm like, I am.
Yeah.
I kind of am. I love the raspberries. And that's kind of sad to see. Not saying that I'm a fan of that later shit or of his back you into a corner lyrics. But, yeah. I mean, let's face it, they were, you know, go all the way tonight.
Yeah, for sure.
But it was just a little bit, you know, not the best day, but I can't. I mean, dude, I'm still above ground. I'm all right. But I am very happy because I did spend a portion of the day getting ready for a certain aspect of this show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Now, I did not peruse the lyrics deeply like I normally do.
Okay.
You know, I just went over them. I saw where things might pop up, but I didn't go into the depths of it. But I did, and I think I mentioned it on the last episode, really, really go into my Buddy Holly knowledge and found out some more things that I think might be pertinent to the song.
Buddy Holly and the Crickets, the song is That'll Be the Day. That is the song we're going to be talking about today.
Thank you for enduring that, listener.
A short boy. This song is 2 minutes and 20 seconds. Or under 2 minutes and 20 seconds.
It is.
So very, very short.
You had to clock them in quick back in those days.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You had to fit that on the 7-inch.
Should I just let you run loose?
No. I want you to talk about this. To talk about this single, about, you know, where it came from, about who wrote it, and then I'll just kind of intersperse as we go.
Okay, yeah. Written by Buddy Holly and Jerry Allison. It was recorded first by Buddy Holly in the Three Tunes in 1956, mm-hmm. For Decca Records, and Decca wanted nothing to do with it. They said, fuck off with that shit, get gone. And then he ended up re-recording it in 1957 with his new band called The Crickets. Mm-hmm. And that ended up being one of the songs that launched rock and roll music into the stratosphere.
Now, there are some people that say that Buddy Holly is essentially the second wave of rock and roll. I know when you go that far back and you go to 1957, you know, how could that have been the second wave of rock and roll? How is that possible? Well, Chuck Berry had already come out. Elvis had already been touring extensively by 1955 with appearances on the Ed Sullivan Show. Fats Domino had essentially released what was going to make him famous. Little Richard was going nuts already, had pretty much set himself into the stratosphere. Those things had all already happened before Buddy Holly kind of burst onto the scene in 1957. Now, he did have... there was a regional knowledge of him from where he was in Lubbock, Texas, and people had known of him because he had two older brothers that also sang. He was born Charles Hardin Holly, and people there knew who he was, and we're going to talk a little bit more about him and his background in just a second, but I know it seems strange to think of him as not being one of the first rock and rollers. But he was just behind that first wave, just behind it. But he did do things that if he didn't do, we wouldn't have the rock and roll the way that we know it today. Because the dude was a gear and production hound.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Because of his contract with Decca, who initially didn't release a song, He wasn't able to re-record any of the songs that he had recorded, including That'll Be the Day, though he did re-record it with the Crickets in 1957. Mm-hmm. So basically the way they got around this is they attributed the song to the Crickets rather than to Buddy Holly.
Correct.
So the Crickets were his new backing band. They brought in some backing singers. Of course, Decca Records, realizing that they really fucked up and really screwed the pooch, they ended up re-releasing the 1956 recording
on a label called Brunswick.
Well, Brunswick was the label in the 1957. But then Decca proper released the recording from 1956 that they wanted nothing to do with.
Right.
That Brunswick recording, that the 1957 recording, the one that everyone knows,
right,
it was ranked number 39 on Rolling Stone's list of the 500 greatest songs of all time. I know we talk a lot of shit about, you know, lists not meaning much, and they don't. But I mean, Rolling Stone is a magazine that's been around for a bit, knows music pretty well. And the fact that this song is number 39 out of 500, I mean, goes to show you the immense amount of respect this song has.
I agree. It doesn't really matter. His influence mattered much, much more a little bit later on. The fact that it came along in 1957 and this was his exposition, the guy died right at the beginning of 1959. So, you know, he was really kind of unleashed upon the world in about a year and a half period. And then you didn't hear from him. But what he did in that year and a half period is massive, huge.
Yeah, 1957, the recording was certified gold by the Recording Industry Association of America, or RIAA, in 1969. It was inducted into the Grammy Hall of Fame in 1998. And placed in the National Recording Registry, a list of sound recordings that are culturally, historically, or aesthetically important and or inform or reflect life in the United States in 2005. The way that they got the line of the song is from a movie called The Searchers.
Yes.
Starring John Wayne.
Have you ever seen it?
I have not.
It's one of my favorite Westerns. It's a fantastic movie. A lot Western fans are split down the middle. They either love it or they hate it. It's a John Wayne movie about a little girl who gets abducted by American Indians out west, and then he goes on a long search for that girl.
So it's not just a clever name, The Searchers.
No, it's they're searching for her. It kind of parallels the Cindy Parker story. Have you ever heard that?
I don't think so.
Cindy Parker was a girl that was taken from a Comanche raid in like 1835, when she was like 10 or 11 years old, and she was forced to walk across the Llano Estacado, the Great Plains of West Texas, tied to the back of a horse, and then the Comanches turned her into a slave. She wound up taking on the culture and becoming like a white Comanche girl. And then she gave birth to Quanah Parker, the last great Comanche chief. And that's what The Searchers is kind of loosely based on, getting that girl back. And by the time that John Wayne got her, she had turned Injun. I hate to use that, but that's what the city, the movie's not really all that, you know.
Oh, PC, you don't PC. Say.
No, not at all. I do like the movie. It's a Western, and I like Westerns. A lot of folks don't like it for its non-PC-ness. I can get, you know, I can get where it becomes problematic. But I enjoy the movie. It's interesting to watch. But in the movie, there's some guys threatening John Wayne, and you know how they're going to come get him. And he looks at him and says, "That'll be the day." And that's where this came from, them watching that movie.
Buddy Holly went and watched that movie with drummer Jerry Allison. And also Sonny Curtis, who in his own right is an American singer-songwriter, mm-hmm. and was a member of the Crickets and continued with the band after Holly died.
Up until his death in 2015.
Yeah, and yeah. Some of his best-known compositions, including Walk Right Back, I Fought the Law.
Yeah, which came out not long after Buddy's death.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Love Is All Around, which was the theme for the Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Yeah.
So they went and watched this movie, and one of the big lines in it is, that'll be the day whenever something, you know, that will never happen, and is used a lot. And allegedly the story is someone said that they were going to be a big band, and someone said that'll be the day, and that's what inspired the song.
Okay.
And so that was that.
Do have to mention just at the beginning, one of the other guys that was credited is Norman Petty. Norman Petty was also, he is credited as the producer. Don't believe that.
Even though he did nothing.
Yeah. Did absolutely nothing. Was the manager of the Crickets. Held all of their money. Lied to them. If ever there was a swindling story in the music business, and there's a lot of them, this is one of the worst. He was the guy that kind of... told all of the Crickets that, you know, he had wound up getting all everything. All the publishing was held by Brunswick, and then he sold it, which made Buddy Holly broke.
Yeah.
And Buddy Holly, and just cutting to the point, Buddy Holly, because he was broke, he had recently gotten married to a lady named Maria Elena. Real funny story. She was working in the Brill Building in New York, and he met her, and then a couple of months later, they talked about who was going to ask her out. He wound up doing it. They went on a date one night, and then the next day they were married. And
back then, people just got married right quick, didn't
they?
Oh,
yeah. I mean, well, she must have, you know, really made an impression, I think. And they were out of money. They were living with her aunt, and he had no money because this guy, Petty, had swindled them, and he needed to go out on a tour and make a little bit of money. He had eliminated Jerry Allison and the rest of the other Crickets. He found a new drummer and a new bass player, the new bass player being none other than Waylon Jennings, who wound up going on this tour with them. It was called the Winter Ball, and they wound up that, of course, you know that he died the day the music died. That was in early February of 1959. He got on an airplane with the Big Bopper and Richie Valens, and it crashed in Iowa, but he would not have been on that tour had he received what he was supposed to receive from Petty. He would have been in the studio producing, which was at the time what he loved doing.
Yeah. And you know, anybody who knows anything about the day the music died, of course, Don McLean's song American Pie, where they say, "This'll be the day that I die," singing "This'll be the day that I die." And we're talking about That'll Be the Day That I Die. A couple of other things, I guess, to mention as we kind of wrap things up before we get into the lyrics. This is the first song recorded by the Quarrymen. That is John, Paul, and George.
Was it?
It was.
Really? I didn't know that. Holy shit.
The Quarrymen, which, of course, ended up becoming the Beatles after they got Ringo.
I got a question for you.
Sure.
First
song John ever learned on guitar, apparently.
I remember watching Anthology, and I do remember them playing this. But I had always thought that the first thing that they recorded was a song by Paul called In Spite of All the Danger. You remember that?
I don't.
You don't? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that that was probably the first song of theirs that they recorded.
Okay.
You know, back then everyone was doing, you know, when they were playing at the in
just
Hamburg
to let you
and
know,
all these other places in the cave, they were doing loads of covers as well.
Buddy Holly, much bigger in the UK than he is here. When I went to the UK in 1995, screw the Beatles and everybody else, those people there talked to me about Buddy Holly, and that was years after the fact. So yeah, Buddy Holly was huge in the UK.
The Quarrymen pooled their money together in 1958 and recorded the song at a local studio and pressed one copy on a 78 RPM disc, which they shared. The disc ended up in the possession of Duff Lowe, the piano player in the group. In the early 80s, he sold it to McCartney. It was first heard in a 1985 documentary on Buddy Holly and was released in 1995 on the Anthology One collection.
That's where we heard it, yeah.
Kind of interesting.
Where is it today? Where is it today? I want to see it.
I'm sure Paul McCartney's got it sitting in a fucking vault. Yeah, that's
that
got to be,
would be
pretty incredible.
Nuts. That would be absolutely crazy.
The original song was recorded in a higher key. When they recorded this one, the Brunswick recording, they did bring it back to a little bit more of a comfortable key for him. And it was released on the Chirping Crickets.
Mm-hmm.
And it was recorded all in one take. which is how they did things back then. No overdubs, backing singers, singing along with them as they're going. The old way it was done.
It's the last of my seriousness, okay?
Okay.
I have to tell you, and what I've been alluding to until now that we're getting right before the song, right before we get to the lyrics, Buddy Holly, by the time he had left Lubbock, he had moved, or he had gone to New York City to record and to publish. He was writing songs, and he also recorded with a guy named Owen Bradley in Nashville, who was a famous guy from the Nashville A-Team. He was the one that started everything in Nashville with the big Nashville sound that we got in a place called the Quonset Hut. Really, really important. Buddy Holly was the first, and it's hard to talk about first, but one of the first people, probably the first guy, to record a rock and roll song with an orchestra. And that was kind of a big deal because he loved writing and recording, so much so that there were tons and tons of things that he recorded and backlogged that were never actually released while he was alive. He loved spending time in the studio and learning new things and applying new things. Him and his brothers and his father built their own echo chamber in Lubbock, Texas, something that is just, that to most people would seem in 1956 a crazy wild thing to do. If you listen to specific things that he did in songs, you've heard Peggy Sue, right?
Yeah.
You will hear two different drum sounds in that song. Pay attention to it the next time that you hear it. You'll hear two different drum sounds because he wanted like definition in between the verses and the chorus. So you'll hear like two different tones and drum styles going on through the song, and it's really, really cool. He was way into production, and none of this surprises me. He is from Lubbock, Texas, and my father was born in Lubbock, Texas. And my father is a production/gear hound. My father, when I was a child, my grandfather would record his voice just sitting there on an old reel-to-reel tape. My father would sit there, and he didn't want to talk about lyrics or anything like that. He wanted to talk about production and how things were done. I watched my father fix microphones because that's what you had to learn how to do. And none of this shocks me because all of the people in that portion of my family that I knew, I didn't know them well. I knew the Florida people mostly. But all of them knew about electronics, recording, broadcast radio, production, and how to fix things. So none of this comes as a shock to me. Not one bit of it.
The last thing I'll mention before we get into the song, it says in the Genius article near the bottom, this is perhaps the most iconic of Holly's songs because it was his first hit. And given its seeming prediction, Holly was killed shortly after marrying Maria Santiago. Yeah. She suffered a miscarriage soon after his death.
2 days.
Making him one of a kind.
2 days after his death, yeah.
So
she didn't find out about his death from the police or from family. She heard it on the damn news.
Yeah.
Yeah, is that not some shit? She's still alive, by the way.
Is she?
Yeah, yeah. Damn. And she's in charge of his estate and everything that that is said about it, you know? So, and this, I don't think that's a bad thing.
Let's get into the lyrics.
Yeah.
Well, that'll be the day when you say goodbye. Yes, that'll be the day when you make me cry. You say you're going to leave. You know it's a lie. Because that'll be the day when I die.
Let's put ourselves in the headspace of a guy writing a song in 1956, man.
Uh-huh.
I mean, for a second, Mark, for just a second,
yep.
Because we know there's things popping up here. It wouldn't be on the show if things didn't.
Right.
It wouldn't. So, you say you're going to leave, you know it's a lie.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, almost all this infringes, you know, hinges largely on the chorus. Yeah. I mean.
Did you know that Buddy was a bit of a philanderer? You're kidding me.
You don't say.
Yeah, you don't say.
With those thick-rimmed glasses.
He didn't, but those were kind of an affect.
Ooh-wee-oo, you look just like Buddy Holly. Oh, and you're Mary Tyler Moore.
I wonder why she's in that song. Why does he mention Ooh, You're Married to
Well,
Me?
I mean, isn't it funny that that one of the people that went and saw The Searchers and that was in the Crickets wrote what would be the theme for the Mary Tyler Moore Show?
Did he? Sonny Curtis wrote that?
Yes.
You're kidding me.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Okay.
I just said it to you a little while ago.
I missed it earlier. I'm
it's
sorry.
Okay. Yeah, it's okay.
All I think about when I think Sonny Curtis is I fought the law.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's really all he's doing.
Well, he also wrote the song that ended up being the theme for Mary Tyler
So
Moore.
I guess that's where the tie-in happened.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, or she's just like an attractive person from that time, I guess, possibly.
1950s.
Oh, and your Maria Santiago doesn't roll off the tongue as smoothly. But yeah, I mean, so, you know.
Okay, I get it. I get it.
We've got some, you know, we got some, how would you refer to this?
A little bit of power tripping?
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit of power tripping?
Yeah, a little bit of you won't
exercise my the force of my will over you.
Yeah, how they took this line that's from a Western to be like, yeah, you're never gonna fucking leave. You can't, because what the hell will I do?
I gotta ask you. Do you think of this as simple?
What do you mean?
I mean, like, could you have seen someone from 1950s sort of small town West Texas writing these lyrics or thinking about these things and writing them down as you know, he's not looking at it as chauvinism or power tripping. It's just a simple thing. These are the dynamics I'm around, and I'm just simply writing about it. I mean, could you look at it as coming from a simple person?
So, I mean, he's 20 years old when they record this in 56.
Isn't that crazy?
You know, I mean, here's the thing. We're looking through the eyes of two grown men living in 2024. It is very hard to put yourself in that age at that time. Do I think there's anything super complicated about this? No. Mm-mm. But, I mean, you know, I don't know how daring it was. I don't know what it was like to tell your parents that you're into this newfangled music called rock and roll. And, you know, dads that were still drinking a lot and beating anyone in sight totally. Within an inch of their life because they're still trying to get over the Great War.
Totally acceptable at the time, you know?
You know?
I mean, totally.
I mean, what a fucked up time, man.
Imagine the bus rides or the meeting at the bus stop. How much does your dad beat you last night? I mean, yeah. You know.
It's going to be terrible.
Not as much as Tommy's dad, you know?
Yeah.
But actually, I think Buddy had a pretty good relationship with his parents. The reason I bring this up, though, is because I've been to West Texas. And it is a big, flat, featureless place. And in my opinion, the people are as featureless as the landscape. I'm sorry, dude, but all of my family that I ever met out there were just as boring and just dull. And that's why I'm saying, does it sound like it could be simple music to you? They are what you would refer to, Mark, as the salt of the earth.
Yeah, I can definitely see that.
Okay.
You know, this whole I also going along with the time that this was written, I get, you know, this is absolutely like you're not allowed to leave and just being like, that's cool. Like, I can tell you, you know, kind of bouncing back and forth between like you don't dare leave and also you can't leave because I'll cry a lot. And just being like, you're not allowed to go
because
I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
I'm just saying, 1950s West Texas. Well, you're cased up. It's the way it works out here.
You say you're going to leave. You know it's a lie because that'll be the day that I die. And so let me ask you, what is your takeaway from that line?
Which one?
You say you're going to leave. You know it's a lie because that'll be the day when I die. Do you think he's saying... So there are kind of two ways to take this line, and I think I know which one he means, but there's kind of another way. One is, you can't leave, because if you leave, I'll die. And the other is, the only way you'll be able to leave is after I die.
This has the stink of...
It's stench.
This has...
P-U stinky.
This has the stink of...
P.U.
This has the stink of, I know you better than you know yourself.
Yeah.
All over it.
Yeah.
All over it. You know that by the time this song was written, he's getting attention in a place where people aren't supposed to get attention, where you're not supposed to want attention, and all of a sudden it's thrust on him at 20 years old. How the fuck is he going to handle it? Well, he's going to write it in a song, and nobody's going to think about it at the time because the song sounds good. But then some 60 years later, 70 years later, a couple of guys, Lee County, Florida.
I hear the song on a radio station. I'm like, fuck.
Started paying attention to the lyrics. Yeah. No, it's got the stink of somebody that is lording their will over another. That's what I think. Is it, the only way that you're leaving is when I die? Boy, how prophetic.
I mean, and yeah, well, that's kind of the, I mean, that's also terrifying. It's also like, you know, the only way you'll get out of this fucking indentured servitude is the day that I kick the bucket and I'm still alive. Yeah. So I know you're not leaving.
That's it. That's what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
I guess kind of one way or another, it's kind of what's going on. Then we get the first verse. Well, you give me all your lovin' and your turtle dovin', all your hugs and kisses and your money too. Well, you know you love me, baby, still you tell me maybe that someday, well, I'll be through.
Man.
What an unhealthy relationship.
Right from the get-go.
I mean, fuck. This is why, you know, I always hear people talk about, and, you know, not to, you know, there are healthy, wonderful relationships and marriages from this time, but I always do get a kick out of those, you know, out of those memes that say, oh, well, my grandparents stayed together for 8 years. And it's like, yeah, well, your grandma couldn't open a bank account until the 1970s.
You make a good point right there.
You know, it's things were different back then where people felt like they had to stay in a marriage or else they would be like,
women had no voice.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean, not up until after the end of the 60s, really. It's crazy. And even then, think that, I mean, I'm only 5 years removed from the 60s. You know, that's so freaking weird when I think about all the things that were, when my parents used to look at me and go, you know, when I went to high school, we didn't have black people in school with us. And I'm like, oh my God, that's so insane. You know, that we're so
right.
I'm 50 in a week, man.
Damn. So, yeah, a pirate sees 50.
Fucking crazy. I know. But I got to ask you this. All your hugs and kisses and your money too has a slight pimp vibe to it.
It's definitely strange.
It is.
That he is just talking to her about how she gives him all of her money.
But you have to remember that once again at the time, these are the days when the money did
these will
collectively,
be the days.
Those were the days when the money did go directly to the man and he handled the damn finances.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, and she's just supposed to accept it.
Yeah, I will tell you, working at a bank, it is very interesting the number of people that we get who call. And I mean, on both sides of the coin, where men will be like, she took care of everything for me. I just worked and she took care of everything else.
Right.
And now I don't know what to do.
Oh.
Which is why I'm always like, whenever I see relationships where like guys are like, she does all the laundry and cooks. It's like, you fucking ape.
Oh,
like, learn how to fucking do something.
Oh, people close to me are like, you know, she does the laundry. You know, I don't do that. And I'm like, I can't, you know, God forbid.
Learn
something
to throw some fucking Tide Pods in a fucking.
No shit.
Jesus Christ.
No shit.
They've really made it as easy as humanly possible.
Someone very
for
close
you.
To me and said, I'm not cooking a damn thing because that's the way it's supposed to work. I'm like, I hope you fucking starve.
Seriously.
I hope you do, man.
What a fucking ding dong.
I'm so glad that I was raised to think for myself and you need to learn how to cook. I was cooking my own breakfast, bacon, eggs, toast. Everything when I was in second grade.
Man, you need to make that shit for me. That sounds good as hell.
I'm good.
Now I want breakfast for dinner.
I'm silly. I'm like Carmy.
Yes, you're making Bear references. You went from almost never watching the show again to making Bear references. I love it.
It was one phone call. Changed everything.
I'm glad. Yeah. I'm glad. So, I mean, he's got all her lovin' and her turtle dovin', which I'm not. I know that. So turtle dovin'. Okay. Is based off of a song
yes,
by the
Coasters.
Coasters
song. It's a great song.
Do they mention in that song what turtledoving is?
Turtledoving is like court and wooing.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like, you know,
wooing and cooing.
Wooing and cooing. Yeah, it's a good song. Of course, it's just the Coasters, but this is not, just to let the listener know, this is not an unusual thing. Buddy was a music fan and drew on all different sources and styles of music. He would have grown up in Southern gospel music like Elvis did, and he utilized that, but he also had a blues and country background and black gospel background. Dare I say, almost more than freaking Elvis did. I mean, important. The guy was important, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. And then, you know, we got him telling her, I know you love me. You know, and like the fact that she's doing all, and like, you know, of course, I know that relationships are very complicated. There is no one way that they're all supposed to go. But, you know, the fact that she is giving all her loving and turtle doving, hugs, kisses, and money, but still tells him that one day he'll be through, which I don't really know what he'll you tell me I'll be through. I don't really know what that applies. Does that mean that he'll be dead or that?
No, I'm thinking in that
they'll be done.
That she'll be moving on. Okay. You know, she's fooling herself into thinking that there's going to be another, you know, Romeo down the street.
Fooling.
Well, you know, you love me, baby. Has you know, once again, that I know you better than yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
That doesn't have that's, and I do have to say that that's not specific to the 1950s. That shit rings down through the ages.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Then we get the chorus again. I'll do one more.
Right.
Well, that'll be the day when you say goodbye. Yes, that'll be the day when you make me cry. You say you're going to leave. You know it's a lie. Because that'll be the day when I die. And then
we get harmonies on this shit.
Yep, and then we get a guitar solo.
And it's good.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's 1950.
Listen, man, he was given $1,000 to purchase one of the earliest versions of a Fender freaking Stratocaster. Because he knew that shit and the amp and a Fender reverb amp, he knew what that shit sounded like, and it was perfection. Listen, it's going to go on the Facebook page. It's going to be brought up. There is a song that he did called Dearest that's just him singing this song. It's much more romantic, much more fitting, much more beautiful, and he's playing just a Fender Stratocaster plugged into a Fender amp, and it is the most beautiful guitar tone you have ever heard. Mark my words, remember I said this.
Me.
The most beautiful guitar tone you've ever heard. It's called Dearest.
Yeah.
You're the nearest of my heart.
Yeah. Let's get into the second verse.
Keep going, yeah.
Well, when Cupid shot his dart, he shot it at your heart. So if we ever part and I leave you, you sit and hold me and you tell me boldly that someday, well, I'll be blue.
This kind of rings of gibberish at this point.
Yeah, I've never heard of Cupid shooting a dart. Have you?
No. No, it's an arrow.
It's always been an arrow.
It's usually an arrow.
I don't know. I've never
heard.
Can you
imagine Cupid with a blowgun? Sitting there licking.
Fighting guerrilla warfare.
Licking the dart.
Did you ever know anybody who made darts in like middle school or elementary school?
Downtown.
Where they would
Fort
take a
Myers,
needle.
Dude.
And they would put, they'd
wrap it up in a rubber band.
And then, I always saw it with thread.
Oh, yeah.
They would make it just big enough to fit inside of a pen.
Yes.
And then you could blow it through the pen.
Yeah.
And they would shoot it up into the ceiling in the band room.
I remember.
And I was terrified. I was like, there's a fucking needle. That's sharp as shit.
It's a common thing now. But in 1989, a guy in my neighborhood made a potato gun.
Oh.
Well before, you know, the internet gave you instructions. And I watched him spray Aquanet into the back of that damn thing, cap it off with a plumbing coupler with a barbecue ignition switch that was bonded onto
yeah,
it.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That thing, and we drove down in the back of my brother's truck down Fowler Avenue shooting it at shit. Please don't let the cops hear this. That damn thing sounded like a cannon.
Well, I'm sure that the... enough time has passed.
Yes, I know.
Statute of limitations.
But I mean, it was just, I still remember, I can still hear that thing, man. Just, wow.
Yeah, so this is a little bit of him being like, turning the tables around, saying like, if anybody's leaving anybody, it's me leaving you.
Yeah.
Because you got hit in the heart by Cupid, you see. And so if we ever part and I leave you, even though the whole time she's like, I might be out of here. Like, it's just a matter of time. And then, yeah, you sit and hold me and you tell me boldly that someday, well, I'll be blue. The genius annotation for the last two lines says...
Does it say I'll be blue or will be blue?
My version says I'll be blue.
Are you a genius?
I am.
I am too, and it says will be blue. You see it right there?
No, it does not. That says, well, I'll be blue.
Oh. You're right.
Hooked on Phonics worked for Seth.
It did. And then it quit.
No, I can see why, because he got well.
And then it stopped, yeah.
Yeah, so this is the genius annotation here. It says, this means if I ever get crazy enough and decide to leave you because of your attitude, you try hard to let me understand that my life will be sad after you. So never let me go. It sounds like it was, that's...
Maybe, once again, the genius stretch.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, because of your attitude...
Now, I'm going to make a stretch here, Mark, that I don't, I don't want to say it is a stretch. It definitely is. Just explain to me if it's super weird, in that whenever I hear in a song, and it's really strange, whenever I hear in a song anyone bring up Cupid, and Cupid has shot you, and you're locked in, and now whenever I hear that, I almost associate it, this is a me thing, with the idea that you're ruined for everyone else. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, you know, like you can't be with anybody else because I've tainted you, you know, like you're ruined. You're not any good for anybody else anymore. It's me. And I don't know why. I really honestly don't know why I kind of made that association. It just feels like that to me.
I mean, it might be because that was very much the attitude of the time.
I
don't know if I'm really getting that from here.
I don't know if I am either. I'm just saying that this is something that whenever I hear it, I'd immediately make that association.
This song is just like three different kinds of mental manipulation or like emotional manipulation, from you can't leave because if you leave, I'll die, to... What you say you don't love me, but you're giving me all these kisses and stuff, so yeah, you do. To you know, this you, what are you talking about? You, if anybody's leaving anybody, it'll be me leaving you. There's just a whole lot of I don't know, just kind of hitting her with six different ways to Sunday.
So you're telling me that between last week and this week, Buddy Holly and Shaggy sat down and wrote the Player's Handbook. I mean, that's
kind of... Yeah, kind of.
Sort of.
I mean, if you put the two of them together...
I like Buddy's version way
Between Buddy's emotional manipulation and mind games and Shaggy's expertly done gaslighting, you got a guy who convinces a woman that they can never leave him and that they don't want to leave him, even though they're saying they want to leave him, and fucking somebody while the woman is standing there moving from room to room, watching them have sex and telling them that did not happen.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
You have a perfect storm of chauvinism, a chauvinist tornado, so to speak.
Yeah.
A chauvinado.
Chauvinado. Watch out. The movie is coming up any minute now on AMC.
Riff Tracks will be covering it pretty soon. Go ahead.
And then we get the last chorus. That'll be the day when you say goodbye. Yes, that'll be the day when you make me cry. I love that triplet.
It is.
You say you're going to leave. You know it's a lie, because that'll be the day when I die.
Every time I hear that, when I die, that the chorus, just that... That the harmony on the when I die, you know that.
Yeah, because you got that when I die, and you got the when I die.
I know.
You got the up and down.
He's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's a great songwriter.
It's a great, it's a great, I don't know if I'd say it's a great song. It's a very good song.
I like it.
It's
a lot.
It's very hard to compare it now. This is the same problem that we've talked about. We run into people with the Beatles, where people hear the Beatles and they're like, eh. And it's like, but you got to understand, like, what else was going around at the time. And I'm sure this is very much, very similar.
It's along those lines. It is. Yeah, it is. Just on a much smaller scale. He didn't have a counterpart, you know, so to speak.
Right.
You know,
didn't
even have a George, for the God's sakes, when you think about that, man. Jesus Christ.
How would you rate this on the creep factor?
Well, given that it's so short, I mean, we only have 18 or no, like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, like we only have like 10 to 12 lines of manipulation going on here. You know, I mean, that's pretty much it. So, and I don't want to take away, well, and the strength of what he's doing, I don't think he's really convincing anybody that has their wits about them. And nobody's dying in this. There's no, you know, sadistic pursuit going on, you know, placing it in the times. It's going to be a low score, but it's still there. Especially when you throw in that, say you're going to leave, you know it's a lie, because that'll be the day when I die. You know, putting that on somebody, putting the weight of death or the threat of death on somebody is really, I think, the biggest transgression in this song. That's creepy.
It's got a creep factor.
That's creepy, yeah. It's going to be like a 4.6.
I was thinking of something very similar. I mean, almost in that, like, almost like when you're looking at financial stuff and you're like, well, when you take into inflation into account, like this is a
adjusted for today's money.
Back then, this was like a 0.2. But when you look at it now, you're like, well, adjusting for emotional inflation, I would give this a 4. I was thinking a 4.3.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it is.
You know,
that's exactly what it is.
I mean, it is what it is.
Now, here's the beautiful part. He did, so he had an affair with a woman that...
One.
Yeah, that we know of.
Sure.
We know of.
Yeah.
That was out in the open with an older woman, and that was not good. I'm sure that he had ladies that were throwing themselves at him at some point. I mean, he's a rock and roller, for God's sakes. But ultimately, when he got with Maria Elena... It seemed like he was on the up and up and everything was fine. Would that have been the case, you know, 10 years down the road? Who the hell knows? In that industry, it's very rare. But he didn't, he wasn't super bad. He was a pretty decent guy, you know, when it really came down to it, as far as we know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
we'll give him a break.
Well, yeah.
Give him a break, Mark.
I mean, four something is still... That ain't nothing.
It's not nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's definitely, like you said, it registers.
Okay.
What are we doing?
Well, that's it for Buddy Holly and his chirping cricket. That's it for Buddy Holly and his chirping crickets with a 1957 hit, That'll Be the Day. Next up, we're going to do a very interesting song we've had on the list for a little bit. This is more of one of those, did you know the story behind the songs, which I love to do. We'll get out of this kind of creepiness for a
little bit.
Now,
listen, you shocked me last week because I didn't even know this one was on the damn list.
Yeah, this
you didn't
one
tell
I just
me.
Threw on there.
You did, but is this one from the list?
It's on the list.
Okay, all right, good.
This one, we're going to do Dancing in the Moonlight.
Oh, yes.
By King Harvest.
Oh, okay.
We just got a yas.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yes, okay. Boy. I bet you didn't know about this one.
Yeah, don't look it up. Let us tell you, please.
Yeah. Holy shit.
Kick back, relax, and listen to this song, because even just looking it up a little bit,
it's
it's
a spoiler.
Whoa. And I mean, you know, I don't know if you guys looked this stuff up beforehand or what.
I sent this to you when I found out about it, looking at like a reel or something. Don't
go
look
listen
it up.
To, King Harvest, Dancing in the Moonlight. And see see what you get from it and wait until we tell you how the song came to be. Seth.
This was fun.
It's a good one.
Listener, go out in there and tell your friends how about one episode, this one guy from Fort Myers, Florida, geeked the fuck out on Buddy Holly. Because I'm a big, but I do like Buddy Holly a lot. He's got a lot of stuff to listen to. He's a very interesting guy. And go out there and tell your friends about how I only did this once and that the rest of the time I'll go back to my normal self of just shitting on or revealing good lyrics, depending on, you know, what the situation calls for. Thank you for indulging me this week. Please go on the Lyrics to Go lyrics2gopod@gmail.com. Send us an email or go to the Lyrics to Go Facebook or Instagram. I will try to put a note for myself to remember to put in a link to Dearest by Buddy Holly. I hope you listen to that. Please tell me what you think of it. Please tell me if you see any lyrics that pop up. Please tell me about how wonderful Mark is and how he does a great job editing these shows and coming in here and talking with me and making time out of his extraordinarily busy life to do what we do, which I enjoy so much. Marky?
Thank you, Seth. I appreciate that. Be like Steven Webster, who wrote on our Facebook, "I'm far too drunk on a Tuesday night at open mic karaoke when Horse with No Name comes on. You better believe the people at my table now know about this podcast." If you hear anybody, you know, sometimes I'll see someone post something about a song and I'll just drop a link to be like, you should listen to this because this will tell you probably everything you need to know and then some about the song that you're thinking about. So we appreciate the passing of the knowledge, Stephen. We appreciate all of you listeners, and we will be back next Monday with yet another episode.
King Harvest,
Lyrics to Go.
Wandered off. Thanks a lot for listening. Our theme song was done by Exploding Pages. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for songs or lyrics, you can send them to lyrics2gopod@gmail.com. We'll be back here next week.